This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. It was almost exactly a decade ago that Google Fiber was rolling out service to Kansas City homes, and we thought it would be a good time to check on whether the service and its lightning-fast speeds was worth all the hoopla. There was a time when some people thought that the arrival of Google Fiber would transform our city. To be sure, some big advancements have occurred, and we'll kick those around this morning. But the arrival of fiber also highlighted the challenges the country faces when it comes to ensuring that even the poorest among us have access to the promise of world-class internet speeds. Joining us to talk about Google Fiber 10 years later are Aaron Deacon. He's managing director of the KC Digital Drive, which was founded a decade ago by the City of Kansas City and the Unified Government of Wyandotte County to address digital equity issues. Aaron, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Appreciate being here.
Also with us is Leslie Scott. She's the Digital Inclusion Program Manager for KC Digital Drive. Leslie, nice to have you too.
Great to be here.
Well, Aaron, the arrival of Google Fiber to this community was hyped almost as much as if the Pope was coming to town. Did Google Fiber live up to all that hype?
Well, nothing can live up to the hype.
Yeah.
The hype was pretty extreme.
Pretty extreme.
For years, people kept asking, when are the flying cars going to get here?
Did you really hear that?
Oh, yeah. That was great. You know, that was great excitement, and the enthusiasm and the energy was fantastic. Part of our job was a tricky thing to both sort of cultivate that, you know, keep that excitement and energy and enthusiasm going, but also temper it a little bit and say, that's not really how it's going to play out.
Yeah.
But we've seen a lot of great impact. You know, we have more fiber here than almost any big city in the U.S. We have a competitive fiber market. We have fiber that serves some of our poorest neighborhoods that the rest of the country kind of salivates over. We've got multiple providers who provide fiber. And as you look at the infrastructure money that's being rolled out all across the country, we are still in a way better position than most other cities. And then on top of that, you see some of the data-driven applications, some of the smart city applications, some of the entrepreneurship activity. It really has continued and grown from that initial hype.
Leslie, but no flying cars. Come on, where are they? what was the idea behind the flying cars?
I think people just thought, hey, it's the future and the future's here,
and
right?
That means flying cars.
And that means flying cars and all kinds of amazing technology. And we did get amazing technology. We're just not to the flying car stage.
What was the best part of the Google Fiber, you know, being here? What did it mean for this town that was the best advancement for us?
Yeah, I think it's important. I live in KCK, so I think it's important to recognize that the very first Google Fiber city was actually Wyandotte County in KCK.
That's right. We forget that, don't we?
In the entire country. So I think that that's just something to acknowledge. And so, you know, shortly after that, that's when it came over to KCMO as well. So one of the things I think that was the most amazing about the Google Fiber rollout was the fact that, and Google Fiber may not exactly agree, but it really highlighted the digital divide in the area. And so, you know, it really, long before the pandemic really shined a light on it, we were looking at a clear dividing line along Troost Avenue in KCMO. And it wasn't fiber, but Google Fiber did offer a free service for 10 years. So it did enable people, after you paid the $20 for a while, I can't remember now how long it was, but you know, you got that service for 10 years. So,
and this was for the poorest neighborhoods of Kansas City you're talking about.
It was. And as Aaron pointed out, there was still fiber available as well. But for people who couldn't afford it, you know, at the $70 price point, there was that. And they also offered some fiber service at some of our anchor institutions, which was great.
Schools, libraries, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, Aaron, to what extent are our poorest neighborhoods covered, have access to Google Fiber today? What have you seen?
I'd say, in the initial rollout, it was about 90-95% had access to the service. And I would say, I mean, what Leslie was describing was a low service level package. So the service that you could get was not the gigabit service, but
it was basic internet service.
Basic internet service.
I remember that now. Okay.
But still fiber infrastructure, which is really critical because it's expensive to lay that fiber infrastructure, and having access to that even at a low income home is is something a lot of places
don't have. The neighborhoods east of Troost, are they wired then? Are there cables buried in the ground for access to high speed if folks want it?
Yes, the vast majority. There are some pockets where it's still not. But you've also got AT&T that offers fiber. You have Consolidated that offers fiber. You've got Comcast and Spectrum have really bulked up their offerings. So you've got, you know, even in places where you may not be able to get Google Fiber or AT&T's fiber, you may be able to get a Spectrum package that offers you 400 megs, down and a pretty healthy upload package because the market here has become so competitive.
So are you saying there is no longer a digital divide in Kansas City?
Oh, absolutely not saying that, because the digital divide, the infrastructure is just sort of the base layer. It's kind of like the foundation for how you build a digital city. And you need to have the connectivity. You need to have your compute power in some of these baseline pieces of infrastructure. But you also need to have, computers in the home. You need to have a home networking setup that allows you to use those. And you need to have the skills and the ability to know how to use the tools that are available to you.
So what are we doing right now, Leslie, to sort of close this gap that Aaron just described?
Yeah, I would add one more layer, which is affordability. So you have the infrastructure, which is great. So you have the access, but can you afford it? Can you fit it in your monthly budget?
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, that's not possible. So we stood up the Internet Access Support Program a couple of years ago, and we've been helping people with paying their past due bills up to $225, and then their monthly service for 6 months up to $75. And then about a year and a half ago, Congress saw the need for something like this as well. They started the Emergency Broadband Benefit Program, which is now called the Affordable Connectivity Program. You know, our government, we love long names.
Yes, we do.
And so ACP, for short, has been providing a $30 a month discount for internet service, which comes right off of your bill.
For who?
Well, and that's what's great about this program. So there's a really broad qualification list. So with our program, we started with 200% of federal poverty, and that's what this program does as well. And then also, anyone who has a child who goes to a community eligibility provision school, which means the percent of families who qualify for free and reduced cost lunch is so high that everybody qualifies. And so that's the entire Kansas City Public Schools, for instance, the whole KCK Public Schools.
So what percentage of those folks are actually taking advantage of the program?
It depends on where you are. So over in, the neighborhoods east of Troost and Casey Moe, we're looking at 50-60%.
That strikes me as pretty good. Or am I wrong?
It is, but, if you had a free benefit that you thought, well, half the people aren't being able to take advantage of it, that's still kind of, frustrating. And I think the majority of the time, it's because people just don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, just getting the word out, we're trying to collaborate with other community-based organizations, schools, et cetera, to just try and spread the word. Because, if you have an automatic qualification, it's just kind of a shame that you don't know about it.
So if you're saying you're automatically qualified, does that mean the internet service is free?
It can be. It can be. So it just depends on what your availability is for, as Aaron was describing, for your service at your house. It can depend on the offers that the internet service providers are providing.
Are we talking about lots of forms here to fill out?
There is an application, and you do have to upload documentation. There are some, and I don't want to get too in the weeds here, but there are some databases that are tied to the application portal, so you can sort of automatically qualify depending if you're on SNAP or WIC and it hits those databases. But the challenge has been to provide documentation that is acceptable to it's called USAC, which is the application portal.
You need tax returns or W-2s?
Tax returns. If you're going by income, you're looking at 3 months of consecutive pay stubs. If it's SSI, you have your SSI letter or your food stamp letter. The The most challenging is with the free and reduced cost lunch, because it has to be on basically letterhead from the school with the child's name, et cetera, and, mm-hmm. and that can be complicated. So we're working on that.
So Erin, what are you doing to close this gap? How are you getting the word out to folks who are eligible but maybe not aware of this program?
Well, Leslie's been doing a lot of events. She's been really beating the drum. Rick Usher, who used to be with the city, has been a huge advocate for awareness. The great thing about Kansas City, and one of the other outcomes of the last 10 years, has really been the wide network of community partners that have joined us in this work. So, you know, this isn't our job alone. We've got a KC Coalition for Digital Inclusion that we help to lead with Kansas City Public Library, PCs for People, Urban Tech are on the steering committee for that, and there's over 70 members that contribute their own organizational resources. Mid-America Regional Council and the COVID Relief Fund has supported some work that they're doing in terms of planning and looking at how to direct some resources. We've had a lot of money come in through the CARES Act and the ARPA programs that has, COVID made a huge sort of underline of the problem of the digital divide. And so you've really seen civic awareness rise.
And COVID did that how, Erin? What are you talking about?
Well, people were disconnected from place. And the need for connectivity to bridge that distance
was greater than ever before, you're
Absolutely.
Saying, because people needed to connect with somebody.
Well, and people, kids were out of school.
Yeah.
Schools went remote. Work went remote. Everyone had to stay home and still try to do what they were doing. You couldn't go into the doctor's office. And so you saw telehealth waivers where insurance previously wouldn't pay for telehealth. Well, all of a sudden they would. Schools would, we're online for a year, and many of them still, will do an online day once in a while. Or on snow days we saw last year, some schools just stayed online. And so this idea, we recognized this for years, right? Mm-hmm. We need to figure out how to get kids online and kids that are in schools that don't have access at home or at a disadvantage. But man, it really drove the point home when they couldn't go to school.
You know, Leslie, is Google Fiber still laying lines? Are they still signing up people? I noticed they dropped the TV service earlier this year, and I know that set people back a little bit. So where is that service in our community right now?
Yeah, I don't know that they're laying a lot of new lines at the moment,
yeah.
But they are still signing up new people where they have existing service. So
okay.
There is still, a potential to get the service.
But have they pulled back a little bit? Is the commitment to our town not what it was a decade ago?
I don't think that that's the case here in Kansas City. I think that they looked, kind of reconsidered it nationally, possibly as a business model, but I think Kansas City is still...
Reconsidered as a business model, meaning going into communities and laying all this line. They're not doing that as aggressively as they used to?
Yes, they're not. And I don't have a lot of, details about their or insight into that. But I know that they did have some plans, and then those plans didn't exactly get executed.
Erin, remind me, why was Kansas City, Kansas picked to be the first city? Why did it come to Kansas City, Missouri so quickly? Why our neck of the woods for high-speed service?
A lot of it was we had really great infrastructure in place. The polls were good. The permitting and regulatory environment was good. The political administrations were willing to work with the company. And I think we represented a good test market.
And that's simply what it was. Because when it came here, it was seen, again, as I said before, like the coming of the Pope.
Well, it was a highly, there were 1,100 cities that applied to be part of that process.
Why? Why 1,100?
People who were paying attention to telecom infrastructure knew mm-hmm. and still know that fiber is the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really critical next generation infrastructure. It's really expensive to build, and it's not something that a lot of private investors were willing to do.
Is the fiber that we get today even faster than it used to be, Leslie?
I'm going to kick that one to Erin, because infrastructure is kind of his thing.
Yeah.
Fiber has a really high upper limit. So that's one of the reasons that it's important future infrastructure is you're not going to max out the fiber. There's some electronics on the end of it that may, adjust your speeds, but the cost of replacing that is trivial compared to the cost of replacing the fiber pipes that the information runs over.
Yeah. Let's look at a couple of projects in particular that have come as a result of fiber being here that the Digital Drive, KC Digital Drive, has been focused on, Erin. One is your Rural Breast Cancer Health Project. This brings healthcare to rural communities. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so you know, this is really exciting, and this kind of brings us full circle. You know, we've talked a lot about the inclusion and the equity side of our work, which was one critical piece, you know, that that we focused on. But the other side is, you know, next generation apps, gigabit apps is what we talked about at the outset. And how do you seed the innovations that need these high capacity networks? One category for that is augmented and virtual reality. And so we did, about a year and a half ago, started an augmented reality developer challenge. T-Mobile was a big sponsor of that, looking to seed public benefit apps that use these new technologies that require not just the high bandwidth, but the low latency, which means you've got, you know, automatic responsiveness on the other end. And one of our partners in that was KU School of Nursing and KU Med. We were running simultaneously a program called Comeback KC Ventures, which is an entrepreneurship development program, looking to take some of the innovations that we saw develop during COVID as a response and help commercialize them. So through that, we ran into a company called MetaView. They have a HoloLens-based tool. That's a Microsoft headset that is overlays a digital overlay onto sort of the physical world. It can do ultrasound tests. And so there's a project with Dr. Jamie Wagner at KU Med and MetaView using HoloLens devices to help doctors that are in maybe rural parts of Kansas connect with oncologists in Kansas City at KU Med and help them with the diagnosis, be able to do things remotely that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do.
How well does it work?
Well, they're just piloting it right now. So this is an early project. And the exciting thing, so we had this AR developer challenge. There's a lot of work in just putting these teams together and introducing people to one another and then kind of formulating what your project's going to be. We had some really exciting news last week. There was an organization called Cable Labs had a 10G challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess 10G is 10 gigabit network. I'm not sure if that's the actual speed of these networks, but of the six winners, we had two from Kansas City, and one of them was this project. It was a $100,000 grand prize that they won to kind of continue the next set of work. And we had another project that came out of our developer challenge that was a $50,000 category winner. So, you know, it was really exciting to see these projects get some resources, get some attraction. And that's the kind of impact that we were hoping we'd see from having this catalytic infrastructure here.
Let's go to some phone calls as we talk about the impact of Google Fiber. Let's go to Ron from Kansas City, Missouri. Ron, you're on Up to Date.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear, Ron.
Okay, great. Look, I live on East 31st Street at Kensington, and they're laying some kind of small yellow piping in the street right now. Now, first question, is that Google Fiber?
Aaron, any idea?
Usually orange is used for fiber.
So what would this be then that Ron's talking about?
I want to say yellow might be gas, but I don't know for sure.
Huh.
They do, I think, correspond to color, usually what they put in the streets.
Right.
Okay. Now, along Cleaver Boulevard, which we've always called the Van Brunt Extension, they were laying a large pipe, yellow pipe, and I think some of that's still going on. You're saying that's not fiber. Or you think it may not be because it's also yellow.
That would be my guess.
Because you're saying, Aaron, that you don't think a lot of fiber is being laid today around town, at least from Google, maybe other providers.
You still see fiber being laid, and I don't really know for sure what's going on along Cleaver.
Okay.
But I don't think, and I'm not an expert on the color scheme for infrastructure, but I don't think that yellow is fiber.
Okay.
Okay, now, you know, I'm an elected official at the county level. I represent these people over here. And I'm not trying to get any points because I don't have to. But you guys have not communicated, or at least Google, I don't want to say you guys. Google Fiber, to my impression, I have not heard any consistent communication between the city since this hype started and the county about, you know, what we're going to do for people, how we're going to do it for people. And I don't think that the program that was hyped so much about helping libraries and schools, I'm not sure, and I'm not sure the public is sure, about where that program went and what the status of it is right now.
Ron, let me just interject here just to make clear our guests are not from Google Fiber. They're from the KC Digital
Drive.
I'm sorry. I was going to say gap. So that's to make sure that's clarified here. Anything you can add to what Ron's saying here in terms of the lack of communication?
Well, I'd love you to reach out, Ron, and we would love to talk to you because, you know, it's not surprising to hear. You know, it's unfortunate, but there are a lot of people in this city. You know, we try to communicate with as many people as we can and reach out. Some of these gaps, I think, are things we can help address. Some of them probably aren't. But feel free to give us info offline, or you can find us online and send us an email or give us a call.
You know, another thing I wanted to point out, Leslie, one advancement from Fiber has been this online learning initiative for those who want to become nurses, a field that's in desperate need of more people. What's happening on that front?
You know, I hate to keep doing this, but I'm also going to kick that one to
Aaron. All right,
Aaron,
yeah, hop in here, Aaron.
You know, he's our innovation side.
All right.
So that's the other project that I was mentioning
the
that came out of that.
$50,000?
Yes,
yeah.
That it won the education category. And it's basically, you know, there's a nursing shortage. It is hard for the nurses who are out, like at the Salina campus in KU, to have some of the same access to experiences and materials. And so they've built a digital twin of the KU Med School campus. And nurses that are out there, they're piloting a couple classes this fall. Keisa Herlihy over there at the nursing school and Jim Starcev on our team are leading that to, you know.
How does a nurse learn how to give a shot online or that way?
So I would defer part of that question to the nursing, the education team. But certainly in sort of the things that I've seen, you know, there's things like guiding your hands, of knowing where to put the shot that you might not know, and that having somebody who's seen the exact same thing as you can help direct you. Also, just they've got simulation labs here, which have, you know, mannequins, test dummies that people kind of practice on.
That's interesting.
But you know, they look like mannequins that you might see in a department store, and the headset allows you to overlay, you know, more diversity of body shapes.
So
body
virtual
types,
technology, right? We're talking about here. That's interesting. Phil from Leawood. Phil, you're on Up to Date.
Good morning. Yeah, my question is, with the advancement of technologies like Starlink, with Elon Musk's company, all the satellites, and then T-Mobile's home internet cellular service being offered now, what do you see as the future of Google Fiber and internet, land-based infrastructure, internet access like that?
Yeah, appreciate that, Phil. Aaron?
Wireless infrastructure depends on fiber. So the more fiber endpoints you have, the more places those wireless signals are going to go. And they really complement one another. And so having ubiquitous fiber infrastructure like we do is going to make our wireless infrastructure a lot better as well.
Interesting.
I just wanted to also say that, you know, Starlink has not up to date lived up to the hype. So I would just caution people to hang their hat on Starlink technology as, you know, going to solve the digital divide in the world, really.
Let's go to John from Overland Park. John, you're on Up to Date.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to kind of comment. Since Google Fiber has gone in, at least in my area, I mean, their customer service and, you know, the speeds have been second to none. I used to have other providers, and if we, you know, two people were streaming in different rooms, you couldn't really, you know, it would glitch everything. But with Google Fiber, it's just been very clean. I've only had it go out twice, and it's been for 5 minutes in the middle of the night, and I've had it for 5 years. And then I just wanted to ask, I heard that, like, Google decided to get into the fiber business because they wanted to force American ISPs to increase speeds and to actually upgrade instead of just kind of resting on their laurels like they were.
Any truth to that, Aaron?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it grew out. I mean, there was a national broadband effort, a plan that came out of the FCC in 2009. There was a lot of uncertainty about how and if that would get implemented. And the story that I heard from both FCC folks and Google folks was the leadership team at Google said, well, can't we, you know, help make this happen? Do we need to wait for the government to spur the investment? And, you know, we've seen shortly after Google Fiber started building out here, the number of fiber builders increased fourfold.
Just one final point, Leslie. You have another initiative underway called KC Goes Tech that launched in July. What's that about?
Sure. So we realized that...
Just quickly, I'm running a little short of time.
Really, you know, we need to look at all three legs of the digital inclusion stool. So that's access, device, and skills. And so we have a cohort of 10 organizations. We are doing a beta test there where we've provided a stipend for them to have a trainer to do a class, 15 hours of digital skills training. And then what we'll do is we'll come in, help them apply for ACP and also our Internet Access
Fund. What's ACP?
The Affordable Connectivity Program. Mm-hmm. So helping them pay for internet service as well as allowing them to purchase a low-cost device so they can have that in their home.
Okay, we'll have to leave our conversation there. I want to thank Leslie Scott and Aaron Deacon, both from the KC Digital Drive, for coming in and updating us on their initiatives. Thank you both very much. Much appreciated.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Up to Date is a production of KCUR 89.3. Our theme music was composed by the great Bobby Watson. The program is produced by Danny Alexander, Zach Wilson, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Reginald David. Our engineer is Paul Nakatura. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.